Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
No, it's okay.
You're listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keepers Preppers Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello, cousins. I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniutikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, Southern Missouri, and
weekend beginning Saturday, the 28th of August, is Grandfather Blue Wolf. Grandfather Blue Wolf operates a website at www.earthkeepers.net. And Grandfather Blue Wolf and some other elders are planning a trip very soon to Africa. They have cultural contacts over in Africa, and as a result of this interview, you folks are going to be hearing some other very, very special treats. We've been looking for an inroad into Africa, and I'll let Grandfather Blue Wolf fill you in a little bit more about what's happening. OCO, Grandfather Blue Wolf, tell the folks about yourself.
OCO. Well, we're up here in Talking Rock, North Georgia. We call this place Wale. And we make herbal products, herbal medicinal botanicals, and we distribute them. And the profits from those medicines and the various stores go to support the environmental projects that we're involved in through Earthkeepers, such as this Clean Water Coalition we have. Now, one of our main focuses, you see, is on our drinking water. We're ceremonying around the water all over the world at this time. All the indigenous people have come together with an indigenous network to ceremony around the water. And so we're focused on that. And then some of the profits from the sales of our products are distributed to our animal programs, wildlife rescue programs, huh?
Oh.
Yeah, like the relocation of some wolves, you know, and the bird sanctuaries for our predatory birds. And then just all kinds of animals are in distress these days for one reason or another. And so we have sanctuaries and kind of like little spiritual hospitals for these animals to come to and revive themselves and kind of get a grip on what's going on, you know, because, you know, we're all kind of in this together, you know, this dream. And so for some of the folks and some of the little brothers, it's kind of become kind of a nightmare. So we have proposed to create these sanctuaries where they can kind of get back into the dream time. And so then some of the money goes to support the work that's being done on these children's programs. You know, that's our other main focus, is the children. And so the work that's being done for equine clinics and horsemanship therapeutic programs, traumatized youth and adolescent substance abuse, and all kinds of abuse, actually, for our children is just unacceptable, you know, so we work on that. And that's kind of what we've been up to these days, working with the children, working with the water, you know, and trying to create a safe and warm place for the animals, you know. That's what we've been up to.
I know that. That's important. I remember we moved here from Utah, and I went to the store one day. We're in rural Utah, and about 30 miles south of Moab, you know, out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And fellow pulled up to the store in a small blue pickup truck, and he was to drive. He had his head out the window. His windshield was totally destroyed.
Mm.
It just looked like a white wall. And I said, "Man, what happened to you?" And he says, "Well, it hit an eagle."
Mm-mm.
And he told me where he hit him, and turned out to be hurt. And so I ran up there and looked for her and got out of the car and walked down this dirt road, and she was up in the cedars. And I was able to find her. And so she wasn't going to go anywhere unless a coyote or something showed up. So we had a little black sweater in the car. So I just took the black sweater and hung it on a branch and went back and left word with the wildlife people exactly what mile marker and what little side road that you need to go to, and I said, just walk until you see the black sweater and take a left-hand turn and quietly go on about 100 yards, and they found her. They found her. She had a broken wing, but these animals have, encounters with automobiles and other things. They need a place to heal, and
that's right.
Recommend you for what you're doing. And for the children, too, my degree was in youth leadership, and I was an executive with the Boy Scouts of America for 3 years, and my first wife and I worked at Father Flanagan's Boys Home in Boys Town, Nebraska, as family living instructors. And then later on, we ran a youth home in Rock Springs, Wyoming, also. It's a Youth Homes Incorporated. So, it's important things to do.
Yeah, we're working on that. And then, in 1978, we started a prison ministry.
Ah.
We've been doing that for a long time, and so it's been kind of escalating, of course, as the prison population has been growing lately. And so now we have a ministry for our incarcerated brothers, in the federal prison system, huh?
Yeah.
All over the country. So we do a lot of that, too. We're so glad, I guess. I could say that. We're glad, that we have these opportunities to do our lodges in the prisons with our brothers.
Have things changed any in Ohio? I understood Ohio was about the worst state to get any kind of native religious things going on in prisons. Have things changed in the last 10 years that you know of?
Well, I can tell you this. Things are always changing, and it's kind of like a roller coaster. Sometimes they'll be up, and sometimes they'll be down, and it's like all over the place. It's like that, and as soon as you think you got a handle on it, somebody comes along and moves the suitcase. And it's been like that all over the United States, and I'll be thinking, well, things are going pretty good out there in Kansas, and the next thing somebody's elected or some warden shifts or, something changes, and then everything changes, and we'll be doing good at one prison. They'll let us build a little cabin, and maybe we can, like a little greenhouse, and we can grow our own sage and sweet grass and maybe some willow trees and build a sweat lodge, and the next thing the warden changes, and they come in and cut down all the sage, and they cut it all down and start all over, and then it's kind of like three steps forwards and two steps backwards, and you know what I mean? And so right now I'm wanting to have a plan. I'm working on a program with the Department of Defense, Department of Justice, the Department of Justice to grow food, in the prison. Just grow a little bit of food, food so that we can garden, so we can grow some sage and some sweetgrass and some osier roots, and
that'd
maybe
be great.
Grow some tomatoes, and some vegetables, to eat.
Oh, that's a good idea. That way you'd say we'll grow some vegetables if you let us grow our sacred items.
Yeah, and then we could, and then, there's usually several acres of land in these prisons that are just not used for anything, and so we thought we could grow some food, and then it could help to augment the budget there in the prison for food, and they'd be eating good food that they grew, and then all this good energy be coming out of there.
Wow.
Because it's really a good thing to work with the earth in that way.
That's great.
And there are some prisons that are doing it now, some in California, and some in Texas,
Oh, it costs a couple $100 to get a drip irrigation system for 500 feet a row, and you can do a lot. Are you familiar with the peyote case that was settled out in Utah very recently?
Yeah.
That, it was really interesting. I knew the principal people involved. I lived in Gunnison, and the state prison was right at Gunnison, and James Mooney, who's the head of the OPLA of Utah, in fact, he'd be a relative of yours. He's Seminole. He's Creek also. He's from here in Missouri. The Chickamauga Confederacy folks have moved down here. But he was it's a really fascinating story. He worked in the prison system as a drug rehabilitation counselor, and his he ran public ceremony also, so we got to know him fairly well. And he lived in the same town. We shopped at the same store. James did such a good job that he had like a 15% recidivism rate, which is nothing short of, phenomenal. He related the story of, once this recidivism rate, lasted for, two and a half years, there was a group of people that came down from the prison system in Salt Lake City, and, men and women, and the first thing that came out of the first person's mouth, it was a woman, she said, "Well, we want to know what kind of witchcraft you got going on here." They just couldn't believe. Talk about insult. But anyway, we left Utah, and then a few years later, we heard about what was going on with their Native American church, and I could see, where he and his wife, I knew her too, where they went through a lot of hell out there, and I was very, very surprised at the decision, but I think it was a good one, for the folks that, but that's their way. It's not Cherokee way, but I know from speaking with we had a good friend in near Cortez, Colorado, Alan Nezkai. And Alan was a full blood Navajo. His father lived over 100, and so did his grandfather. But he was only, I guess, in his late 50s and diabetic, and he'd had several amputations, and he had been a Christian minister, and they ran him out. So he went back to went to Peyote Church, I guess, with his father's way, and had a very successful Peyote ministry there, just south of Cortez, with a nonprofit organization. And we attended an honor powwow for him just before he passed away. Just a beloved, beloved man. And but from what I understand, with some friends of ours who were mixed breed Lenape white and Scott Irish and Lenape, they participated in a lot of ceremony with Alan, and they said there's a lot of love that when they partook of the peyote. Well, I understand you're headed off to Africa here pretty quick.
Yeah, on the 7th, we're going over there, and we still have a little fundraising activities going on to help us out with the documentary. We still need some help with some of the equipment and such for the documentary. But we're leaving on the 7th and going over to South Africa and up into the border there into Zimbabwe, huh? And then over to Mozambique, and then back down through the Kruger Park there, back down to a place called Mahalisburg, and it's called the Spirit Mountains, and then we'll do some ceremony there, and we're meeting with some leaders of some various tribes. There's about 7 tribes that we're meeting with, the Zulu Nation, and the Shangaan Nation, and the Bavenda Nation, and the Limba Nation, and the San people, just to name some of them. And then people like, you mentioned Credo Mutwa earlier, Busa Mazulu Credo Mutwa, they call him Baba. And we'll be meeting with him, and doing some councils with him. We're real thrilled to meet with him. He's such a powerful person over there, He's like the medicine person for the Zulu Nation. They call him a Sangoma. He's like the lead Sangoma.
Yeah, anybody that's heard of David Icke interview has heard of
Credo.
Credo Mutwa.
And then we're meeting with another lady over there that is very revered in the whole continent. Her name is the Rain Queen Mojaji. She's a spiritual leader for the Bavenda people, and she calls the rain for the country. Very honored position, and she's been doing it for several thousand years. The Rain Queen. We're excited about meeting with her. And then we're meeting with Chief Shivasi, and we're meeting with kind of interesting, you know, it's a beautiful thing, really, that there's so many tribes that we've met with, from the Ainu Saparo over in Japan, you know, to the Quechua people in Peru, you know. And no matter where we go, a fella might tell you, you know, you say, well, you know, so how's it going over there? And he says, oh, it's going good, you know, I got some good food, I play my drum, you know. I said, oh, you play drums? He said, yeah. He said, that's what I do. I'm a drummer. You know, I play the drum. But you ask the people in the village, and they'll tell you he's their spiritual leader. He's their medicine man. You know? But you ask him, and he'll tell you all he does is play the drum.
That's right.
That's a good thing.
That's right.
Yeah, so I met this fellow, you know, Pops Muhammad, who says that. You know, he says, well, I just play the drum. That's all I do. But I know he's a powerful medicine person over there.
Very humble.
Yeah, and he'll tell you he's, you know, he just plays music. You know. So what happened was, you know, this lady, this beautiful lady, grandmother Noria, sent some folks over here a couple of years ago. She had a dream that corresponded with it, a dream time story that my grandfather told me. You know, we were talking about a while ago, you and I, about the past. There's a lot of beautiful stories about the past, and a lot of stories we just soon forget about the past, you know.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Blue Water. Ayurvedic medicine is also called Ayurveda. It's a system of medicine that originated in India several thousand years ago. The term Ayurveda combines two Sanskrit words, Ayur, which means life, and Veda, which means science or knowledge. Ayurveda means the science of life. Ayurveda is a whole medical system which integrates and balances the body, mind, and spirit. Thus, it's considered holistic. This balance is necessary for contentment and good health. While pharmaceutical companies extract active ingredients from plants and sell them as drugs, the benefits of medicinal plants cannot be replicated because their synergistic combination of hundreds of naturally occurring phytochemicals cannot be reproduced in laboratories. This fact has been known to Ayurveda for thousands of years. The benefit comes from using the whole plant, not just the isolated ingredient. Because they contain whole herbs and fruits, Ayurvedic formulas are safer and more effective as opposed to Western formulations, which oftentimes have harmful side effects. We satisfy the health needs of our customers through safe, well-researched, and effective Ayurveda-based remedies using premier quality herbal extracts and sound manufacturing practices. We believe in Ayurveda so much, we're willing to offer you a 110% money-back guarantee. So be sure and visit india-herbs.us today and find out what this is all about.
There was this one story where we were relocated from this area at one point, or there was a strong attempt to relocate the indigenous people from this area to the west. I'm talking about this area, the southeast of the country here, you know. The Cherokee people, the Creek people, the Anikusa, the Choctaw people, you know, move them all out west. This was around 1830. And it was Andrew Jackson was involved in that relocation. The president of the United States at that time. And so as a lot of these folks were moving and getting ready, and, you know, there was a lot of fear and a lot of apprehension, a lot of deceit, a lot of manipulation, just a whole lot of various kinds of things going on, never mind all the atrocities. It was just kind of a mess, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of the spiritual leaders, as the story goes, at that time were looking for a safe place to put a lot of the medicine songs and a lot of the information that was born in the hearts and dreams of all the ancestors. And so they held a big ceremony, not just one, but they held a big ceremony, and they put this most sacred of sacred music and songs and prayers and information into this beautiful place in Dreamtime, telling everyone that the only people that, who would have access to this information and these songs were the people who could go to that beautiful dream place. So that's the safest place that you could put information like that. Because only people who have the capacity and facility within which to enter those beautiful dreams will ever know that information, and it's okay for those folks to know it because they have arrived. People who live in the nightmare will never have access to those dreams, see? People who perpetuate the nightmare. So, and they said, you know, when this dream becomes a way of being, the right people will have those dreams, and the music will come back, the songs will come back, the medicine will come back, and we'll be back once again in this beautiful dream place that we're now leaving as we move out west. So, corresponding with that story, here's Grandmother Noria over in Africa who's having these dreams, huh? About my grandfather.
Huh.
So she sends some folks over here to tell me about these dreams that she's had. And I'm just looking at them, you know, thinking like, You know, because I knew the story, but I thought it was going to come from the indigenous people of this country. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I get to thinking. So I sent the message back and said, yeah, you know, I want to know more. She says, I have these songs, and they belong to you, and they belong to your family, and they belong to your people, and you need to come and get them. I'm too old to travel, you know, she's like in her 90s, huh?
Yeah.
So she threw the bones, and that's how she got my name and where I live and all this information. I don't know anybody in Africa, you know, before that, you know.
My word.
So she's been orchestrating this whole trip, see, from that perspective, and she has gathered these other leaders together to do ceremony over there, all around this beautiful place in a dream of 1,000 years of peace. You know, this prophecy of indigenous people holding on to their land, and the dream in the heart of this healing place where babies are safe and babies have somebody to love on them and somebody to love and food to eat and family and a village to be raised in and all the good things in life that matter about balance and harmony and nurturing and kindness and you know, all these things, harmony, all these things we long for, never mind just this beautiful place of unconditional love where you have community, you know, you have community that matters, you know. And so, and you have good water, you know, and good food, and everything is just like this dream, you know, and it used to be that way. And so, all these leaders, the Rain Queen and Credo and Baba Credo, Grandmother Noria, and Janet Wynn Walker, this clan mother of the long hair clan I was telling you about earlier from Texas
Cherokee,
who's going with us, yeah. They know this story, see, and they're all involved in this retrieval program to go over there and this process of getting the songs, you know, bringing them back here to our people. And she says, she sent a message, and she says, you know, and the ones who are coming on this trip over there to get this music from her have something that belongs to the African people. We have something that belongs to them, she said. So, of course, I get the word back to her, and I go, what could I possibly have that belongs to you? She says, well, I don't know, but I'll know it when I see it. I know you're carrying it. She's got a sense of humor. And so I'm just so, you know, it's like I'm just so blessed, you know, to be here at a time like this and be involved in such a beautiful journey of such, you know, personal kinds of do with the dream that my great-grandfather told me about, that my grandfather talked about. And now I have become my grandfather. I have become my great-grandfather. And I'm still, you know, in this dream thing that was presented to me as a child. And it keeps on going. And it's just a beautiful thing. And so that's what this trip to Africa is about. It's about all these indigenous folks coming together, you know, these earth keepers, huh? Various tribes all coming together with unity and diversity and cultural significance at this time, where we pay attention to our hearts and the dream of this one thing, you know, this relationship with the earth and all of its inhabitants in a good way. You know, it's like when we say all my relations, you know, that's not just an intellectual comment, you know, that's actually a heartfelt connection that's as real as, you know, your feet and your hands and, you know, your eyes, you know. We are connected to each other, and it's just as real as that.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true.
Well, we're excited about this trip, and so we're going to do all this, and we're planning on coming back on the 22nd. And anybody wants to come with us, we still got about 8 seats on the bus.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it is what it is. It's kind of like these lodges, you know. Lodges have a life of their own, you know. When you follow the lodge, it all works out just perfect. You invite some folks to the lodge. Sometimes they show up. Sometimes they don't.
Now, when would you be leaving?
September the 7th.
Okay. And what, if anybody out there... is interested in going, what would the cost of the trip be?
Well, that varies on airlines and such, but...
So they have to be there.
Well, the airline ticket right now, whether you go through, you know, right now we're flying on Delta, we're flying on Air France, we're flying on South African Airways. There's several planes going over there depending on where the folks are leaving from. We've got people leaving from Germany and France and California and Texas and, all, you know, just all over the place who are going to rendezvous there in Africa, you know. And so depending on where a person's coming from, the trip costs anywhere from $2,000 for a round-trip ticket to about $800 for a round-trip ticket.
Right.
And then sometimes people they have like vouchers or buddy passes, or they fly standby, and then you get all kinds of discounts if you do that. The accommodations over there are such that if I think probably it's such a variation on cost that the best thing to do would be, if somebody was interested, to contact me at bluewolf@earthkeepers.net, the email.
bluewolf@earthkeepers.net.
Yeah, just email me. Or I can give you a phone number if they don't have computers. If they don't have computers, they won't be listening to this show.
Right. Right, absolutely.
So it'd be bluewolf@earthkeepers.net.
What do you think the future of the documentary? You think it's something that like PBS would pick up?
Well, you know, we're going to submit it. We've already applied for a submission into the Sundance Film Festival and to the Atlanta Film Festival.
Wow.
And we're going to put it in various museums, you know, to have it run, like, you know, various kinds of museums of natural history and IMAX museums and such around the country.
Do you know how to engineer video for the web? I do, if you need some help.
Oh, great. Yeah, that was another thing, you know, archive it on the internet, because basically we want to just have this information out there so everybody has access to it. We want to show... See, the other thing, you know, these ceremonies are about peace, you see. And so, you know, there's a lot of talk right now, a lot of interest, and a lot of people who are saying they're going to this country and that country to talk about peace. And often it's really not about peace, it's about economy. You know, it's about economics.
Right.
And peace as it applies to certain economics. But the peace is peace, you know. It's not something that you buy. It's not something you negotiate. You have to be peace, you know. You have to the words of our people. You know, you got to be the change that you want to see in the world. You can't just talk about it as it's outside yourself. You want to talk about relationships, you got to be in relationships. You want to talk about peace, you got to be a peacekeeper, a peacemaker.
Right.
And so that's what this is about. It's, you know, it's about making peace. And so from that standpoint, we want that message to be spread, see, everywhere, that, you know, 80% of the population of this planet is made up of indigenous people who so far haven't really had an active voice. Mostly what you hear is the information coming from first world nations, you know, the powerful G8 group, you know.
The conquerors who are the ones that write the history.
The dominant culture mentality, yeah.
Right.
You hear their stories, see, and that's pretty much it. So, and you don't really get a chance to hear all sides. You know, it's like in this country, you know, you hear the story of the, you know, like this country didn't have a past before the American Revolution, you know, when the country was discovered by, you've seen these t-shirts, I'm sure, from the res, you know, they're coming off, they say, you know, it has a picture of Geronimo on the front of the t-shirt, you know?
Right.
And then across the top, it'll say, Homeland Security. You know,
uh-huh.
That famous picture of Geronimo holding his Winchester,
I've seen it.
You know? And then across the bottom of the picture, it says, fighting terrorism since 1492. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And so this is, you know, we weren't just a bunch of folks bumping into trees, you know, before 1492. You know, we had a very sophisticated culture and lifestyle over here that had worked for thousands and thousands of years that was just beautiful, you know. And so magnificent. It was the dream. It was a dream. It was so beautiful. And so, you know, that's the story. And so, and it wasn't just in this country. The same thing was going on in Australia with the Aborigines, with the Maoris in New Zealand, with the Ainu in Japan, when Japan was taken over about 500 years by the Chinese.
Right.
You know, about 500 years ago. And then the Ainu was conquered, let's say, and then shifted up into the northern part of Japan. And so then the Chinese and the Koreans took over Japan. Then the indigenous people of Japan became a problem. So Japanese history was written by the dominant culture.
Right.
The same thing's happening in Africa right now, see. And so, and so if we don't start talking about this and spreading this and holding councils about this and getting this information out, either through music or on the internet or in films or in documentaries, there's a chance that people might just not know about it. You know, because sometimes we'll talk about things with people and they'll say, you know, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that the Native American religion was once upon a time a felony. I didn't know
from
that.
1979.
Yeah, people say, I didn't know that. How could that be? The Constitution says you have the right to practice, you know, your religion in this country.
Well, up until 19... before 1910, they were still hanging Indians here in Missouri. It was Missouri statutes from the inception of this state that if you didn't have a pass from the governor, you could be removed in chains or simply, in some cases, summarily executed. And I understood there was about 60 Cherokees that were hung in, where was it? Down around Mammoth Springs or something like that. Don't hear a whole lot about it, but it's things.
That's what I'm saying. You don't hear a whole lot about it. See,
no.
It's time to talk about it. You know, it's time to make it, put it in the news and make it mainstream and talk about, you know, what's going on the Pine Ridge Reservation in the Black Hills with the Environmental Protection Agency and the Park Department, you know, and the Department of Interior, and illegal mining activities, and the sale of the Shoshone land out there in Nevada, you know, recently that President Bush signed that bill that allowed all that Shoshone land to be sold, huh?
We've asked. We
15 cents an acre.
We'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
We personally have asked, I have a close friend in California who's personally asked Corbin Harney to come on. My teacher, Roland Thunder, had married into the Frank T. Moak band, and he was a spokesman for some of the Shoshone out there. Was very close to the Dan sisters.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. All that involvement right there with Corbin and the Dan sisters and all that. I mean, it's just a mess.
In fact, the week the weekend that I met Rolling Thunder in the early 90s, they'd gone in there and see what had happened was is the Nehue Segovia, the Western Shoshone people have, I believe in 1870 some odd treaty, the Treaty of Ruby Mountains, as I could recall. And, you know, the government was serious enough back then that one of their men jumped the reservation, and what the Shoshones remember is the troops killed him, cooked him, and made the folks eat him. And I know that's an awful story, but things like that happened back then. But now that the federal government wants land to dump who knows what on or to conduct nuclear testing, and that was on their land, and all of a sudden the Western Shoshone are supposed to suck it up.
Right.
Well, I guess what the Dan sisters did, from what I remember, my memory is not real good, that was 12 years ago, but I guess they filed on a spring and were watering their cattle there, and I guess the big cattle people just came in with a couple pickup trucks and just put chains between them and just cut down. They had some buildings set up there. I guess they were built with railroad ties from what I remember, and they just ruined the whole thing. Of course, you can't have a claim on spring if you don't have some improvements there, and then they scattered all the cattle, and then the BLM comes in from time to time, claiming that they don't have a right to graze their cattle, and these people just get nothing but grief. And then, the thing that Rolling Thunder, he told everybody about was how the BLM would come in and chain down all the pinion nut trees.
That's right.
And that these people lived off of, and then even what they were able to gather, the state of Nevada wanted a tax, so they are getting a pretty raw deal out there.
Illegal gold mining, and I mean, it's just a mess. And then the problem with Yucca Mountain, and the Hopi Land, and the burying of the nuclear waste there, and what they're doing to the Mi'kmaq fishing fleet. I mean, you could go all over the United States and look at just huge, huge problems with nations within nations, and think, what the United States is doing in Afghanistan and what they're doing in Iraq. They've been in on Indian reservations ever since they formed them.
Nothing new.
Nothing new. I mean, so it's like, might makes right. What are you going to do? It's like, the big kid on the block. He just got to go in there and just do what he wants to. And then all our people become political prisoners and, arrested as extremist or terrorist or whatever. So one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist, you know. And so it's just a mess, see. And so, and the media's spin on it is such that people don't really get the clear picture of what's going on. They'll be saying, "Oh, this guy is a criminal," you know, and everybody goes, "Oh, well, you know." And then when you go into when you go in and find out what really happened, you go, "Oh my God, you know, I didn't realize that stuff could really go on," you know, and say, "Yeah, you know, it's happening, you know, believe it." And so that's what this film is going to help, you know, is educate and inform. And you know, we know it'll be beautiful because all of the folks in the countryside over there is beautiful. So it'll be a beautiful piece of work, and it'll be, but mostly it'll be informative, you know, to let people know what's in people's hearts, you know, around the world and around, you know, what's happening on some other level right now, so we can help be a part of the transformation that's taking place at this time. Because, you know, it's kind of like that old saying, if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem, you know, because you got to pick something, you know, you got to do something.
Right.
Yeah, so we're suggesting that you know, offering this for people's consideration, that they consider being part of the solution for peace, you know, and for the beauty way, huh?
Right.
Because it's all about the babies. You know, if we don't have a beautiful place for our children to grow up and our grandchildren to grow up, then what are we doing?
Yeah. That's absolutely right. It's all about them, and you know, we were, you know, it's something. You know, they say if the message is important enough, it'll get through.
Mm.
And you know, your experience with the Rain Queen. You know, I grew up knowing I was Cherokee. I knew them. When I was 16, my uncles presented me with the genealogy. 37 of the family tried to enroll on the 1896 Dawes payment roll and were rejected because they didn't live in Oklahoma or Indian Territory at the time. But I guess when the time came, I was told in the early 80s, three or four times in 1 year, that when I turned 30 years old, that something very important would happen. And that year, turned 30 in December of 84 and 85, that old man appeared to me in a dream. And it was like he was sitting, it was like we were sitting opposite each other at a table. I could see him from the chest up. He had a white stone around his neck. His name was written in the stone, and there was a key embedded in the stone, and I wasn't able to remember what his name was that was written in it. But I just remember he was a full-blood Indian, and he said to me, "When are you going to do something about," and he mentioned the name of my ancestor, Gardner Green, "when are you going to do something about Gardner Green's genealogy?" So that started things off, and I met some folks in Utah. There's, you know, Lenape people all over the place, and met some folks that were proselyting the Great Law of Peace, and associated with some other folks down in southern Utah, and like White Eagle Neal and Robert Three Eagles, who's been Dr. Robert Grossel's partner in some of the searches for red-haired mummies, and a lot of good folks. And then just, you know, but by the time my first wife passed away in April of 95, before she passed away, she just said, "Hey, you haven't even started your own work yet." And she became very prophetic, you know, before she passed away. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" She says, "Well," she says, "Spirit told me your work's with your own people." And, you know, so figuring out who my own people was, that's been a defining moment. And, you know, I knew they were Cherokee, and then I found out they were Chickamauga Cherokee.
you know, and which means the Chickamauga Confederacy, which brings in your people, and the Seminoles, and the Muskogee Creek, and the Yamasees, and the Shawnees, and all kinds of people, and including Six Nations people, and just all kinds of people, and these are people I've been working with, and you know, I got involved long enough in tribal politics to know that that wasn't what I was supposed to be doing, and eventually met, you know, before I left Utah, I had some teachers other than Rolling Thunder, Zula Brinkerhoff, who had been the daughter of, adopted daughter of the keeper of the Hopi prophecy, David Monongi, and was introduced to Thomas Bunyakya and other elders, and eventually I was introduced to John Red Hat, who was born into the Kituwa Society and was enrolled in the Cherokee Nation, and he was old enough to also be enrolled in the United Kituwa Band. He was born not too far from here in Missouri, to and his teachers were two full-blood Cherokee grandmothers and a freed woman. And he grew up here and in Oklahoma, in the old Cherokee religion, learned to speak Cherokee and English. And but he grew up, you know, speaking the old dialect, and the old dialect of Kituwa was pronounced Ketura, and he remembers how his grandmother would trill the R. So he had some interesting thoughts about you know, what our origins are. Felt very strongly that that we came out of Samaria long, long ago. Some of the other Chickamauga people here teach that Anakulakula pulled the nation together in 1750 and said that we came from across the Eastern Ocean several thousand years ago. And the Kituwa origin myth and prophecy says that we lived on an island off the coast of South America, and then we moved up here. But I learned a lot of really interesting things from John Red Hat. He was a member of the Long Hair Clan, which was the spiritual core of the clans, and a very wise man. He oddly enough, converted to Judaism, I guess in the 40s, when he was like 9 years old. He started having dreams about the Holocaust. Actually learned to speak German in his sleep. Was shown that it was the women that were really pushing the Holocaust more than the men were, and ended up, and this happened because he moved to Tulsa as a teen and was befriended by some Jewish boys, and eventually adopted by their father, and John became a Levitical priest. And he eventually got dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, but the thing that he taught was that, most people, what he told me was, he said, Blue Otter, he says, anybody you meet that claims to be a Cherokee expert is neither. He said, there are so many things that Cherokee did, he says, we tried everything. He says, if you hear a rumor that a Cherokee did that or do that, he says, if I give you dollars to donuts, that's true. And he says, we got good karma from some of it, bad karma from some of it. He says, but we had no paradise here. But he was a pretty wise man. He spent 28 years in the military, retired a bird colonel, did a lot of high-level work. I guess in his last assignment, he went out to Desert Storm, I guess, in the early 90s. But he passed away on the 30th of December, this last year, and he was in a very good place. Creator spoke to him all the time. He didn't make a word without listening to Creator, and he had people like the beloved woman of the Mohawks, that was a very close friend to his. A lot of elders highly respected him, and he was able to convince Chad Smith, Principal Chief of Cherokee Nation, to ask the nation to stop calling unregistered Cherokees wannabes. I mean, this man had a lot of influence, and there was a lot of good things going on around him
There's a lot of people that loved him, a lot of people hated him, but he was very vocal about what he thought was right, what he thought was wrong. But the thing that he impressed me with was that that it was our job to lead the nations back to the Great Spirit. And after he passed away, I'm getting chills right now, it's early, isn't it? Shortly after he passed away, I was interviewed by a lady, and that spun this show off. And shortly thereafter, John appeared to me in a dream, and I used to drive truck. Had to, you know, got a college degree, but I had to, he had to drive truck to move in here and get settled in here. And, but in a dream, we were driving around Denver. I was driving north from south to north in town, and he just hopped in the truck and had a load of logs. And he said, "Move over." And he got in the truck and started backing us up.
Cool.
And so from the dream I got was, he's backing us up. He was the founding elder for Prophecy Keepers, and his influence continues as so many people do. And his close friend Dottie Daigle wrote the book Red Hat Speaks, and she lived with him for 10 years. Took care of him. He had level 3 emphysema, and was a pretty sick man. But he kept going, and had to be on oxygen most all the time. And Creator put him where he wanted. But back in the 60s, this man was very active in AIM. He became very close to John Lanza, who was, if anybody's read like the Book of the Hopi, they're familiar with that name. And John's brother Mike was chief of, or the Kikmongwe of Oribi. And, you know, they kind of looked at John funny because, you know, all his life he was called Red Hat. And, you know, there was this prophecy about the true white brother would come with a red hat or cloak. So they always kept pretty close eye on him. And you know, we basically, this council is made up of you know, Mike's relatives and John's friends and relatives. And we're the Twin Fires. I found out recently from a fellow, Dr. Tim Jones, who has, I guess a couple of years ago, he said that anciently the Cherokee and the Hopi were the Twin Fires.
Hmm.
That if anybody in a grand council, and they would have, you know, every few years, people from all over the continent would get together, or if they went to sacred places like Montauk or other places, any grand councils, if a Hopi or a Cherokee spoke, everybody shut up and listen. And, I was very fortunate to have good teachers, and we're very fortunate to have you. You're an excellent teacher, and we're grateful that you're going to help us to open some doors. I've always been very, very concerned about Africa. It was very, very difficult to find. See, the original website we put up in 1996, and it became wovoca.com, W-O-V-O-C-A.com.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was very, very difficult to find African prophecies. It's like it was difficult to find Chinese prophecies. We found some more Moorish prophecies, black Muslim, and but I've been very, very concerned about very pushed to make contacts in Africa and make them feel welcome on this on our broadcast and be a part of it. And
yeah,
we're hoping that you'll be able to open up some doors.
Oh yeah, well, I'm already, you know, wanted a lot of information because, for instance, the Busuma Zulu Credo has a lot of princesses already in this country from Africa. They're studying with him for years, and once they leave his compound over there, you know, he sends them out on a mission. And they're dedicated to this mission, and they're all over the world. And there's a lot of them in this country that would be happy to, I'm sure, speak with you about this, mission that they're on by way of Credo Mutua for one, and the Rain Queen for another, and it's just about everybody over there, you know, they're global in their perspective, you know, they understand that, you know, the world has to come together, you know, there is no kind of nationalism anymore, you know, there's no one way to do anything, we've got to act as one people, you know, because everything is connected, you know, bacteria from the Serengeti is being found in the Everglades.
Oh, my word.
You know, something, the world is connected, mother is breathing, you know, and it's being felt everywhere. So, I mean, you know, people in the Ainu Suparo were telling me things that were going on in Peru that they just, you know, that they find out in ceremony because Creator tells them things, you know.
Huh. You know, Alberto Villaldo went down in South America, and he showed their holy people down there a globe. They'd never seen a globe of the earth. And these people knew exactly. They said, oh, well, you're from here.
Right.
And these guys over here, they don't like you. And you're going to go, they're going to be going to war against you. And
right.
Amazing.
They know, you know.
It's just absolutely that people have, you know, I grew up white, and it took me a long time to really learn to appreciate, and I believe me, I can understand anybody out there that wasn't raised a native, you know, listening to this, to not be able to, I understand if you don't relate to some of these things, but, you know, the traditional Jewish people, I understand. They say that there are 36 men in every generation that can transcend time and space and go anywhere.
Mm.
You know, we had Ted Silverhand on here just a few weeks ago, and he talked about Mad Bear Anderson.
Yeah.
Mad Bear was really the father of this show. I never met him. He died, oddly enough, in 1985. And he was a close friend of Rolling Thunder's, and I'm beginning to wonder if he wasn't the guy that came to me in the dream.
Mm.
But I didn't know until 2 years after I started doing this, you know, putting all the posses up on the net, and I ran across his book in the bookstore there in Moab, and I always flipped to the back looking for posses, and was reading in there where he said someday somebody's going to go all around the world, gather up all the posses and put them in one place, and I just went, oh, wow. And it was, at that time, it was so easy.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we've got, I think, 150 articles from 60 different nations, including Africa, Australasia, the islands, just, you know, every hemisphere, just about every nook and cranny on the planet.
Well, you know, all the prophecies I've been bumping into, they all resonate with one another.
Absolutely.
Especially the ones with the indigenous people.
Well,
when my grandfather, you know, I was raised out in southern Alabama, you know, Creek people, Lower Creek people, and one of my grandfathers was Sam Little Bear, and the other one was Charlie Lightfoot.
What county were you raised in?
Escambia.
Okay. You're probably a cousin of, you know, Billy. I was talking about Billy Bowlegs. Red Eagle and my ancestor. Red Wolf or Gardner Green, they, after the Chickamauga Wars were over, they moved down into Alabama. There's quite a story about what happened down there, but he was the grandson of Chief Perryman of the Creeks, and his father was William Augustus Bowles. And William Augustus Bowles also had a Cherokee wife, and fathered Chief John Bowles of the Texas Cherokee fame. Well, William Augustus was—he was an old pirate. He tried to form a Muscogee republic back in those days, and through a conspiracy between the Spanish, the Spanish and the English couldn't agree on anything, but they agreed on they wanted him dead. You know, you're probably kinfolk. You know, our seventh great grandfathers probably were close friends.
Probably, you know, everybody I meet, you know, when I go out to Pine Ridge, everybody I meet, great grandson of Sitting Bull.
Yeah.
I mean, I the people that were the, if they weren't the great grandson of Sitting Bull, they were the great grandson of Crazy Horse, you know.
Well, American Horse?
Yeah.
I know a lady in West Hollywood, or in Hollywood, that's, she's a descendant of American Horse, and her people went up in Canada.
Yeah.
She's half, and she's been in literary work for a long time, was close to Rolling Thunder. But, Elizabeth Wilson. There's a lot of them out there. The Native American world is a very small world.
Oh, I know. And everybody knows everybody. Especially once I got involved in the prison ministry, 20-something years ago, I met so many people that it's like everywhere I go, I met somebody related to them.
Yeah.
Cousins, uncles, aunts, grandmothers. And so I think, gosh, it's like a small town.
Well, but check
them out. Everywhere. It's like our town is everywhere.
Yeah, well, a lot of them. When the wars were over and they wanted to keep fighting, they went, a lot of Chickamauga Cherokees and Creeks and Shawnees and everybody else in the Confederacy, they went out on the plains and joined up with the Sioux,
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why, one of the most common names, I think the most common name among Native Americans is Wilson. And that name, you can trace back to, and I'm
not the gay, huh?
Comes out of Virginia. Married into the line that came down out of Pocahontas, went down through the descendants went down through the Creek and Cherokee nations and ended up out on the plains apparently. And you may have people, bad guys like Dickie Wilson.
I thought the two most names I keep running into, if it ain't Yazzie, it's Begay.
Oh yeah, yeah, they went on the Navajo, they get Yazzie and Begay and. But some of the ones that, the intermarriages between the whites. I've had some really interesting things happen when I was training to be a trucker. One of my trainers is just kind of psychotic, and I have to be changed, and literally had to sneak out of the room in the middle of the night. I was up in North Dakota in. Up there, and I can't remember the name of the town, but then they put me on a bus, and this guy gets on the bus, full-blood Indian, obviously had been drinking, and carried a buffalo skull. they always see it on the bus, it was mine, so he says, naturally I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to keep this guy out of trouble if I keep him talking, because I know if the bus driver smelled his breath, he'd just throw him off, but he was carrying buffalo skull ceremony and he had to go to the bathroom for a minute and came back, and when I handed back the skull, part of the skull, the back of the skull fell off of my hand. He says, "That's yours." But he was telling me, you've heard the story, you're from Southern Alabama, you heard the story of Madoc?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, "Hey," I said, "you're man." He said he was Mandan or Rikwa. And he said his grandmother was the last Mandan speaker, and they were transcribing the language. And I said, "What's this about you guys, possibly being descendants of a Welsh?" He says, "Oh yeah." I says, "Absolutely." He says, "We know, that at one time 30% of our tribe, and we're talking the 1830s, when ethnographers and artists went up there, they still had." White people running around, and our when John Sevier was speaking to one of our chiefs, he asked about Madoc, and one of the chiefs says, "Oh yeah, we chased him at a big battle, ended up on a sandbar, and chased the rest of them up the Missouri River, and that's where they went." And but you're talking about 1100 A.D. Madoc and 600 others came over here. The Britons had invaded Wales. They had murdered most of the Welsh priesthood. And those people were Cymri. And the Cymri, the Cimmerians, the Samaritans, and, they all come out of Samaria. And, so do the Hittites and the Egyptians and the Hebrews. So when the Lakota say Matakia Yasin, they mean it.
That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
That's what I was saying earlier. That's why our African brothers mean it too.
We're related to them.
Yeah.
They are our oldest relatives. They were. Did you see that History Channel special about the I think it was called the Three Daughters of Eve?
Yeah, well, they called this place we're going the Cradle of Mankind.
Yep.
And so, and it's this place over there called Sterkfontein Caves is where this skeleton was found.
Yep.
Of the first human.
Yep.
You know, and
they were able to trace the DNA all back to her.
Yep.
And they said that she was black, and they said to everybody in Northern Europe, and they were able to year by year trace her DNA all the way out into Southeast Asia. And it was a fascinating show. And they said the only reason why people got lighter skin or smaller nostrils, you know, was because they had less melanin, needed less melanin in the skin when they went to Scandinavia, and that was the only reason why they had variations over thousands of years. And, you know, explains why, you know, you have Melanesians and other people that have black skin and curly hair, and we are all related.
That's what I'm talking about.
They have proven it.
Well, you know, I'm looking at horses and deer and elk and bear and eagles and thinking, you know, my DNA spread out everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the water. I'm thinking the water is one of my sweetest ancestors, you know. I said somehow water is my grandfather, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, and it connects us all. You know, that's one of the things we were talking about, you know, the Cherokee people call the water the long man, you know.
Long man, the river.
Yeah, and so it's like comes from a place that has no beginning, goes to a place that has no end.
That's
the source
right.
of all of life, you know.
Pretty good.
Water has a memory, you know, it remembers everything that's ever happened to it. And
that's right.
So we can really, really learn, you know, from the water, and it just kind of, without it, you know, there is no life. So that's our life. Yeah, so then it relates to song. I mean, we don't have a world, you know, without it. And so all of the people on this world, all of our brothers, no matter what shape they take, rely on this one substance, you know, along with air, you know, but water is the thing, you know.
That's amazing.
So we're all related to the dream fabric, you know, that we sustain ourselves in.
And that same water that was put on the planet, who knows when, it's still on the planet. It doesn't leave.
Mm-mm.
It just keeps coming back.
That's right. It's just kind of like this recycled kind of thing. I mean, it's an amazing process, this organic breathing entity, you know, it's alive, you know.
Do your people stop dance?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the Creeks did. You know, the first stop dance I ever went to, it was taught by Grandfather Richard Craker. And Grandfather Richard, he's the grand old Ottawahee here in Missouri and Arkansas, and very highly respected in Oklahoma also. He's Chickamauga Cherokee and Quapaw. And German, I believe.
Mm.
This is not too far from here, but he sat us down. He took, maybe 2.5 hours. He asked everybody who was there, maybe 60 people, you know, who was your mother's name, what was her name, what was her mother's name. He had to get everybody organized in the clans before he could dance. Then he explained the clans, what their sacred items were, what their taboo items were.
Mm-hmm.
And as he went around the circle, I could see that the items that one clan worked with, they had to go get them from another clan, and vice versa. There was taboo for them to gather them, but another clan had to gather them. And this symbiotic relationship that was set up by Creator for the planet and the biosphere is perfectly reflected in the clan system. It's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, they say, you know, if you've never stop danced, you know, if you don't know your clan, you're not Cherokee. And, you know, there's a lot of people, if you've got one man, you know, between you, like currently I'm without clan, but my ancestors, you know, came from Bear Clan and Wolf Clan, and clan adoption is still a possibility for folks out there. And, you know, these, you know, so if you're a Cherokee, and I might be the same way. I understand the Creek and Cherokee people at one time were more or less the same people, lived together. I understand that we fought sham wars, practice wars. We've always been pretty close. I'm not. What were you taught about that?
Well,
I mean, you're Muskogean people. It's a different language, but we've always.
That's a different language, and so we have another whole story about that. That goes back to that sacred mountain down here that produced the Choctaw people, and then it produced the Chickasaw people, you know, and then it produced the Creek people, and then it produced the Cherokee people, you know, and so.
Can you say the name of the mountain?
Well, it was called Spirit Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this mountain, it was in, reportedly, I guess, in Mississippi. At a time when Mississippi had a mountain. And who knows? Could have been a dream mountain.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
I know my mother grew up in Vicksburg.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you an interesting story. A few years ago, I was contacted by a fellow by the name of Govinda Sanyal. Govinda was half East Indian, and the other half, he was Nottoway Indian.
Yeah.
And he came down from the line of people, the Nottoweka people, and he was a school psychologist on Staten Island, master's degree most likely, married to the state dancer of India. He was born in India, and he said that when he was, tell me a very interesting story. He said that he was talking with some Chickasaw elders some years ago, and he asked them whether they would be willing to confide in him the name of their clan. And when they said the name of their clan, he was absolutely floored, because it was the very same name as the clan he was told he was a member of when he was married by his father in India. He went on to tell me about, you know, Cherokees call Kentucky Gandugee, and he began to relate to me all of the linguistic comparisons between Cherokee and the old Dravidic Brahmin languages. And we also have another fellow who's done some research into the Phoenician languages. And in the 30s, there was archaeological work done that tied the Cherokee people to the Phoenician people. It explains why they always had to have an opening to the sea. Govinda said that these elders told him that their story was that they came from across the ocean. Landed in Mexico, and they migrated up climate, you know, it's pretty arid, you know, until you get up, you know, even into Texas, and they got into Mississippi and the piney country, and that's where they settled.
Hmm.
Hope to get him on the show. He's kind of a shy guy, but he even have a story to tell. It's just amazing. And
well, I can tell you, this is a story that my grandfather told me about us. He didn't tell me a whole lot about the Cherokee, and he didn't tell me a whole lot about some of the other people. But he told us, because we're part of a clan called the Star Clan. That's who we are, the Star Clan people, the Star people. And that's one of the things that resonated over there, because so are the Zulu people.
Huh.
And so, and they come from an area around the Pleiades, you know, the Pleiadian.
That's what Grandfather Rollenfender said about some of the Cherokee people.
Well, that's what we did too. And so, and it was a part of the Star Clan called the Blue Clan. You know, the Blue Clan, huh? And so, and it was a blue light. And so, and it resonated because the way the story goes, when these spirits were up in the Pleiades and they were looking out, they could see this blue planet, you know, the Earth, kind of a turquoise ball floating over there, you know. And so the idea was, you know, they said, well, they resonated. You know how things just kind of resonate.
Uh-huh.
And so, and it was like echoes, like ripples. And my grandfather always says, you know, it says we're about three echoes away from the real word, you know. So you can imagine that they're up there thinking that they're echoes, and there's echoes, and there's reverberations, and they look out and they see this blue light, and they say, well, the tendency is to want to merge. So they took this blue light and came through the heavens and landed here on the earth with the promise from the Great Spirit that if we continue to love Spirit with every, you know, every bit of our being, huh, and love each other, that everything was going to be all right. That's all you got to do. Love the Creator and love your people, and everything's be all right.
Absolutely.
You got enough food, you got enough water, you got plenty to do. Just take care of the place. Take care of the animals, take care of the trees, take care of the food. Just take care of everything as if it was your mother, right? As if it was like you being in your mother's womb, where you were totally sustained, where you don't have to worry about where your food's coming from. You don't have to be concerned about waste. All you got to do is listen to the sound of the heartbeat, you know, the drum, huh?
Right.
Listen to the sound of the blood going through the veins like a rattle. You know, the sound, you know. And dance, you know, just dance. So just enjoy, you know. Eat the food, drink the water, enjoy yourself, play the drum, make yourself rattle, you know. Do the medicine, you know. Be related. Love one another, you know. So that's what my grandfather told me. And so he said that's how our people were born. And we were brought down here on that blue light as part of the blue clan of the Star people. And that we were sent here to do those things, to enjoy this place, and to take care of the medicine. We were considered the people of the roots and the herbs, you know, the medicine keepers. And so
our blue clan, Cherokee blue clan, is the same.
Yeah, the medicine people. And so we just knew all the herbs, you know, and just got to know them all, you know. And there's probably a couple of thousand different herbs around here, and I don't know them all, but I probably know about 300, you know, and I probably know about 50 pretty intimately, but 300 kind of casual, you know, acquaintances, and probably 2,000 people out there, herb people, you know.
Grandfather.
Yeah, and so that's been my story, you see, and so that's what my grandfather and grandmother have instilled upon me, is this relationship with the plant people, you know, the herbs, and animals, but you know, our animal brothers and sisters, you know, I have a real strong affinity for horses, you know, and wolves, and oddly enough, from a lot of people's standpoint, I have a strong relationship with snakes, you know,
me too.
I just kind of get along with them.
My
know?
Like my sister loves snakes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're just like, they're very companion-oriented critters, not contrary to what a lot of people think.
Oh, yeah.
You know? They can be extraordinarily contributing companions, you know.
Good teachers.
Yeah, and we have a couple in our grain house, you know, and they're better than cats, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Keeping them rodents out of there.
Good bull snake. You got one of them, you'll never have rattlesnakes around.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm liking them, you know, and so that's our story, you know, that we came from the Pleiades, we came down here, you know, and then we to enjoy the place. And so what we've noticed is over the years, huh, how that's kind of gotten out of hand. People just kind of forget, you know, and even when they're supposed to profess to be this way, from the various religious standpoints that they profess, they forget, you know, they start arguing about academic, you know, items, various kinds of things, and basically it's just kind of drop back to the beginning and go back to where almost every religion and every philosophy and every prophecy says, you know, the same thing, you know, just love one another, be kind to one another, that you can pretty much encapsulate the whole thing, just set the book down.
That's what the Kituwa chiefs describe the Cherokee religion as a religion of love.
Yeah.
We have a video that was shot in 1984 by KJRH Television that has not been seen very much. Bill Jones was with the Tulsa TV station at that time, and he approached and got permission from the Kituwa Society to document, and it was close. The chief William Smith had to break the tie because some didn't want the belts shown publicly and other sacred items and parts of ceremonies. But they came right out and described what the Cherokee religion was. It's a religion of love, caring, and there's a lot of confusion among our people because, you know, by the 1880s, there really wasn't much of our culture left, except among the Kituwa, probably pockets of Chickamaugas all over the place. But there were a lot of witchcraft being practiced, and so we have a lot of folks that are very angry and resentful too. And so we have both, one balance in the other, and offering people a choice. But if you get a chance, you can go to Kituwa-Society, KETOOWAH-Society.org, and you can click on that link, and it's about a one-hour video. And but see, a lot of the restoration of the Cherokee religion as it's practiced today, Redbird Smith went to your people to obtain a lot of it, but the sacred fire had been carried through, was originally with the Natchez people down in Mississippi. We're apparently all part of the Mississippian culture. That I guess the Natchez people were the heirs of the Mississippian people that come out of Cahokia, and oddly enough, that was the height of Cahokia. That was the year that Madoc and his people arrived. Oh, we could spin some tales, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to keep you too long, but it's up to you how long you want to, you know, if you feel like you're talked out, we'd sure love to have you on another time also, unless you feel like there's something else you want. If you want to go longer, we'd sure welcome you to.
Well, I appreciate it. No, I think what we could do is, you know, if we could kind of I have a few more things I'd like to say, and then probably a good thing to do would be maybe when we get back from Africa, maybe get Grandmother Windwalker on here, the long hair clan mother from Texas, and talk about Africa, maybe, and get Credo, you know, Kusumazulu, Credo Mutwa, and maybe kind of continue on with the changes, the, you know, the incredible changes as they occur, kind of report them so that people kind of get a sense of what's going on. I'd just like to reiterate and acknowledge you and thank you for inviting us on your program,
your show,
Prophecy Keepers, and how excited we are to be here. So honored and blessed to be a part of this transformation at this time, and let people know about you know, our website, earthkeepers.net, and anybody that wants to pray with us and maybe join us and help us out. You know, we can always use more help with the prison ministry. You can only be so many places and only so many people. You know, there's thousands of prisons in this country, and we have people in every one of them. You know, our Lakota people, there's just so many Lakota people in prison, and Navajo people, you know, the Dene people are just sick about it. You know, they're trying to build a prison on their own property there so their people can be there, you know. It's hard to...
Mark, that'd be smart.
Yeah, it's just really hard, though. I mean, it's just such a difficult thing, and so... we can always use help there, and anybody that wants to find out more about this peace tour to South Africa, you know, in the spring we're going to be going to Australia. We're going to have a ceremony with the Aborigine people and then the Maori people, and then a little bit later next summer we're going back over to Japan with the Ainu people, and then later on next fall we're going back down to South America with the folks down there in the Amazon.
Hey, we got a friend down in southeastern Australia, D.K. White.
Mm.
He's a friend of Red Elks, and I know he'd love to meet up. How you doing, D.K.? we swap stories, and he married Aboriginal, and got some of those beautiful, you know, some of those beautiful children in the world I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Half Aboriginal, half white, or you know, half or quarter, just absolutely gorgeous people. I mean, you mix anything with anything, and you know, you get like the mixed blood black gal that won the Miss America some years ago, and she's got a big acting career, and it's really something.
It's
interrupting. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just, you know, wanting to let people just know, you know, what's going on is with Earth Keepers and some of our relatives around the world here, and invite them to join in, participation and contribute and participate, you know, in the changes that are going on at this time, you know, because it's a beautiful time to be here. One of the things we said, my grandfather said, you know, he said the world is perfect. There's just a lot of folks having a bad conversation. And what he said that our purpose here was to lift the level of our personal poetry so that it would reflect the highest aspirations of the characteristics of what it means to be a human being at this time on the planet. So we change the world by the things we say to one another, you know, and then we take those words and put them into actions, and the actions become deeds, and the deeds becomes our character, and the character becomes our destiny. So, you know, I invite people to participate, you know, to just get out
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, this is Will Bluehour speaking on behalf of Native Remedies. As the systems of the body are interrelated, proper functioning and health occurs when they are in balance and harmony, so it's important to consider taking a holistic approach to caring for your body. Provided that they are manufactured in the correct way, natural medicines can work quickly and safely to create holistic balance in the body to support systemic health, relieve ailments, and help prevent future disease. Most natural remedies do not produce negative side effects, and unlike conventional medicine, natural remedies do not just mask symptoms, but they get to the root of the problem to support health and affect healing at the same time. Most homeopathics are even safely taken by people of all ages and during pregnancy. Homeopathic medicine is actually suppressed here in the United States. Outside of this country, a large majority of medicines that are prescribed are homeopathics. Did you know that the cure for malaria was developed by the man that invented the homeopathic system? That's right. So friends, please take my advice. Visit the front page of prophecykeepers.com and click on the Native Remedies banner and find out what all the excitement's all about.
Absolutely, we got
to change. You know?
We've got friends in Australia. White Wolf's a friend. I believe he's Cherokee, and he's teaching down in Australia.
Mm. We're going to Sydney, you know, and Perth and Melbourne. You know, we're going to all those places.
Absolutely. Our friend Earth Thunder, we interviewed her a while back. She had. Before I met her in, which is just, I believe, about 89, 90, you know, she'd been to Australia twice, and very well thought of down there. Another Chickamauga Cherokee. Here, oddly enough, her Cherokee people went out to the Rocky Mountains in Idaho.
Hmm.
And when you get a chance, listen to that interview sometime. Sure, her people lived, the locals call them Red Dogs, and they live up in the, well, if you've seen the movie, Last of the Dog Men. I mean, that's her family. Only they were Cherokees. There were Cherokee
dog soldiers.
Yeah, there were Cherokees. They weren't Cheyenne. They were Cherokees that went out there probably about 1721. Because there's about a quarter of our nation went to Mexico. There was, you know, stories about the bands that went to the Rocky Mountains, which Sequoia was looking for. And but 1951, her people. Loggers came in and they killed all the adults, and they took her and four other younger children. She was 10 at the time, and all the rest of them were just little, and took them to orphanages. And as far as I know, for the first time, she told the story on that interview. Very, very poignant, story, and encourage everybody to listen to that interview. And
yeah,
it's gonna be a real treat if we can get you hooked up with some of our friends down in Australia. Cause
yeah, one of the ceremonies we're looking forward to in Australia is over there at Uluru. You know that that stone altar there called Ayers Rock,
uh-huh.
Uluru. That's, you know, because it's the sister mountain to Stone Mountain here in Georgia.
Huh.
Two of the only granite outcroppings in the world.
That's right.
Yeah, and so they're both kind of like sister altars, and so that's one of the reasons we're going over there is to, this Stone Mountain over here, the Quartz Princess, has been our altar for thousands of years, and so that's one of our main ceremonies in Australia, Uluru.
Awesome.
And we're looking forward to it, so yeah, we'd be happy to meet up and find our brothers and sisters over there and ceremony and land down under, huh?
Absolutely. We've got a lot. We've got some interesting things. We've got Red Elk. He's been up in Canada now. He's been going to sacred places along with some of the Cree medicine men, and we're hoping when he gets back to his home in Washington. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. A lot.
I'm telling you. That's right.
Well, if you feel like you're all talked out, we're gonna let you take your leave, and
appreciate it. Appreciate it again. It's just wonderful talking with you, and I just had a great time, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Grandfather Blue Wolf.
It's been my pleasure, and good night to everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases.
I'm Austin Powers. I like Gas
Mojo.
It's a very sexy and very switched on, yeah.
But you gotta have Gas Mojo, baby. Yeah!
What a gas, baby. Yeah!
I'm going to go back to the 60s and steal Austin Powers' Gas Mojo.
Hi, folks. This is Will Bluewater speaking on behalf of GasMojo.net Engine Booster. Immediate 25% fuel savings with GasMojo.net in just 5 minutes after installation. And your grandma can do it. So you just strap it on your fuel line, folks. Some customers report much greater savings. The GasMojo.net Engine Booster catalytically conditions any hydrocarbon fuel, be it gasoline, propane, diesel fuel. It's not a filter, it contains no metals, magnets, or toxic substances, and uses no electricity. The GasMojo.net engine booster unit is a specially designed tube containing a completely safe proprietary media. It's a passive fuel treatment process designed to disperse hydrocarbons for better performance and mileage, and also to break down carbon and other contaminants. Unlock your fuel's hidden energy potential now with GasMojo.net. And folks, you get a 100% money-back guarantee on this. I've got one on my car. It was developed by an old friend of mine, and he's an honorable person. You got to try it, folks, and go open a bank account now for all the money you're going to save. GasMojo.net, GasMojo.net. Just do it.
Thank you. the truth.